You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 303. This week, we talk about The Wicked and the Divine, Fandemonium. Visit WelcomeToComics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now, the cast begins.
And not usually waking up very much, like, it'd be totally doable for us to, like, have people over for, like after dinner snacks or even like a little potlucky quick, like, small dinner thing, and, like, do a D&D group for, like, 2 or 3 hours. Like, come over at 7, we'll play until 10. The problem is that we'd have to host. and you would probably have to host, and if Brandon did it, Brandon would have to host. Like,
yeah, and my kids usually aren't asleep.
Yeah, so it's like, I'm finally at the point where we can do that kind of thing, and I don't have enough friends to do it. Alex is down, like, we're down. I'm like, great, we can D&D with 3 people.
I mean, the other thing is we could try something like Roll20.
Yeah, doing it online?
Yeah.
Over Skype, too.
Or Discord. Because, like, I'm interested in playing D&D also.
Because I've played, like, a half a campaign once in high school, and that's been it. And I had no idea what I was doing. So I, for all intents and purposes, I had never played Dungeons and Dragons, and it seemed like something that was right up my aisle, because I would love to, like, I'd be the guy who comes in, like, with a helmet on and everything, and play up into my character, do all the RP stuff. I would love it.
Yeah, I think it would be awesome.
Hey, so I'm going to let you know, and let everybody know who's listening. I don't know if Jen's going to make it, because Jen had been gone for the last couple of weeks because they moved back into the country and were securing housing. They bought a home, but they bought a home up in the hills, and right now there's a fire. I texted her a couple days ago, and they were 4 miles away from the evacuation zone, but the fire's not really contained. So I haven't heard from Jen in a couple days. My guess is they're getting ready to pack things up out of the home that they just bought, like, literally a week ago. I don't know if they're in the evacuation zone right now. I could probably look that up, but I haven't heard from her. And if she's dealing with that, I would rather have her deal with that than text me back.
Yeah.
So, I ain't holding it against her at all, but she's not here right now, and it might be a while until she comes back again, because I don't know what her situation's going to be like.
I didn't realize that they had bought a place up there.
Yeah. So Jen might not be here for really shitty reasons, but
that
hey.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Hey, but, I don't know, should we talk about comic-related stuff now?
Yeah, we should. Do you want to just get into this week's comic, or do you have some banter?
I do have something to...
Ooh, yeah, let's do it. What do you got?
...to talk about. So, many listeners know how much Andy and I love Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
And we're really excited for the new movie to come out.
Yes.
Well... Legendary Comics.
Oh, they
announced that they're going to do a 6-issue miniseries called Pacific Rim Aftermath.
Yes.
That takes place between the two movies.
Oh, yes.
So it's actually it's about Jake, John Boyega's character, and what he, like, what, you know, while he, like, tries to figure out what's going on and stuff, apparently.
Yes.
So it looks pretty sweet.
Oh man, I'm really pumped for that, in case you can't tell.
Oh, and there's also, I read that there's, so the Jaeger that, excuse me, the Jaeger that, that Gypsy, I guess it's not Gypsy Danger, what's the new one called?
Huh? The new one?
Yeah.
Oh god, I don't know.
Oh, Gypsy Avenger.
That's right. Yeah.
So in the trailer, Gypsy Avenger is fighting another Jaeger, a black Jaeger, and it's called Obsidian Fury, apparently. That was news today. Pacific Rim news. The hype is real. I've been following the news of the movie, because I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. That's but, awesome.
Yeah.
Have you also, speaking of things to watch, have you watched any of the Star Trek stuff yet?
I still have not watched Discovery.
Okay. Have you watched Orville?
I have not watched Orville either.
I'm gonna put this out there right now. I think I like Orville more than Discovery, but it's because Discovery is very non-episodic. It's very serial, so mm-hmm. I don't know where that story is going. There's some themes that are kind of coming up a little bit, and it's looking like they're gonna weave some story around. But it's much more in the Battlestar Galactica vein of storytelling, where it's trying to be one big story that follows a specific character. Mm-hmm.
That's different for Star Trek.
That's very different for Star Trek. But definitely there are tons of Star Trek themes in there, tons of awesome call outs and callbacks. And there's stuff that people are like saying are going to tie in. Like they're going to explain some stuff that's never been explained before. So I'm excited for some of those things to maybe come to fruition. And I'm excited to talk to you, David, about them. Cause some of them are super relevant for DS9 as well. there's like the hubbub is that the writers of Discovery are super DS9 fans. So there's lots of good DS9 tie-in stuff.
Nice. But,
so I don't know where I am with that one, but I can tell you Orville is fantastic Star Trek, even though it's a parody.
I'll have to check it out.
The first like pirate 2-episode special thing is not quite Star Trek-y. It's more on the comedy side, I think, because they're trying to pull people in. But man, every episode after that is like, I was expecting like just a fun show, but Seth MacFarlane is doing like real Trek.
Well, he's a real fan, so.
Oh yeah, he is. He definitely is. And he's the guy who did Cosmos and everything. And like I think I was saying last week, like it's Brandon Braga and Jonathan Frakes and like a bunch of Trek people. But like the tone of the show is very comedy like, but I've been surprised over and over how the show is willing to just end in like this icky, uncomfortable, morally questionable place, because that's where it deserves to end for the debate that they've been like, for the topic they brought up for that episode. Like, that's super awesome, like TNG inspired Voyager level Trek. So I don't know which one you're gonna like, because Orville's very like traditional Trekkie feel, but Discovery has all the DS9 tie-ins and is more of a serial story the way DS9 kind of was. So I'm interested to see what you're gonna say. So I'm not like trying to pressure you.
Okay, well, how about this? I'll try to watch at least one episode of each before we record again.
Sweet. I'm down for that. Yeah. Man, I could talk about Star Trek all day. We should do a Star Trek show.
We could just make this a Star Trek episode.
You know what we should do, David? We should contact the guys at Neo's Ads and see if they want to have a Star Trek in character show.
And we could do it.
Yeah, we could.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. As if I'm not already doing enough podcasts, I have to cut one out. I think I'd cut Survivor for that. I would totally rather do. Yeah. I would way rather do Star Trek than Survivor. I love Survivor, but not that much.
Yeah, I was going to say, you love Survivor, man.
I do. I love it so much. But yeah, you want to talk about this week's comic?
Yeah, but before we start, I just want to say something. Okay. Since we started talking about Star Trek, I am going to reinstall Star Trek Online now.
Yeah, it's fun. The ship combat's fun.
Yeah, I miss playing it.
Yeah. And it's free, so like, what I love about a free-to-play MMO like that, and maybe this is just because I paid for, when it first came out, I paid for the lifetime subscription, so I get all of the benefits all the time, always, and then some out of them. But I always think it's great. Like, I log on, and there's been, like, 3 new expansions, and I play through them, and then I don't play for 4 months, and it's fine. I don't have to feel guilty. It's not like Warcraft, where I'm like, I'm paying for it, maybe I should go on. Like, there's no, like, cool, I just log on, I get my burst of fill of it, and then I'm good, move on. All right, this week's comic?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. It's okay.
This week's comic.
This week, we're continuing our Podcaster's Choice Volume 2 series. So to celebrate 300 episodes, each one of us picked a volume that we read a while ago and picked it to read Volume 2. So David picked Wicked and Divine. We read, here I am slacking again. We read Volume 1 of that in episode number, computer is too slow.
Yeah, I don't remember what episode it was.
204, so almost a square 100 episodes ago, we read Wicked and Divine, the Faust Act. And that ended with the trial and the murder of Lucifer and the judge, which is awesome, huge cliffhanger. But I didn't realize after that I had read this. So I knew it was coming up. Did you know it was coming up at the end of this?
No, I had not read volume two yet.
Yeah.
I read volume one again beforehand because I couldn't really remember exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. So I like forgot about the bit where, Laura she snaps and does the fire and stuff. This one had a big cliffhanger too.
Yeah. You think volume one has a cliffhanger? Fandemonium comes and hits you.
Yeah.
And
I'm glad that I have the next couple trades also, because I'm going to need to read them.
Yeah. And I like the way that Kyron Gillen, who wrote this, kind of strings you along with Laura in the way that you see it happen and you think it's true. But then just like Laura, you see her trying and trying and trying, and you kind of give up the same way Laura kind of gives up. And then at the end, it turns out to have been true. Like, by the time it's revealed that she actually is one of the gods, I had completely given up. I was like, it didn't come from her. It was something else. Somebody else fucked with her. You know, it was one of the other gods. Like, by the time you get there, you like Laura, I'm just like, definitely not. But turns out you are! Shit!
But, yeah, I mean, like, so we got a lot more of the gods in this one.
Yeah.
We spend a lot of time with Inanna and Woden, right?
Yeah.
And those guys were both very interesting. Dionysus. I was like, what's Andy typing?
Yeah, Dionysus too.
Yeah. I mean, we had known Baal. I think it's not...
The ball is a baller.
Yeah, and we don't see it explicitly, but it looks like Laura and Ball have
relations.
They have close relations. Well, they get closer to one another, which is interesting because you know she Laura seemed to have a bit of a fangirl perspective of Ball for a long time, but. Or prior to this, and she also found him intimidating, but he seems to be actually one of the less schemey gods. Like, he is kind of asshole-ish, I guess is a way to put it, but I think he's pretty, I don't want to say one-dimensional, because that sounds a bit, it has a negative connotation, but he's, what you see is what you get with him.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's interesting. I think that's true and it's not. I think he's all about the impression and all about the show and all about how he comes off. And he wants to be seen as being the biggest, the best, the ballerist, you know? Like even I loved in the first trade when there's like this giant portrait of him, you know? And so he wants everybody to see how awesome he is. But I think the flip side is that he really is awesome and genuine, in a way that you don't come to expect out of what he's trying to put out there. Like you find out that he also had close relations with Inanna.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. But it's not something he talks about because he feels like, and not because of, what you would expect. I think a lot of readers would expect that Baal wouldn't want to be out there for the gay thing. But I don't think that's Baal's problem. I think Baal's problem is that Inanna can't commit. Which is also, like, comes back to the fact that Baal's just kind of genuine. Like, he wants a committed relationship. That's not I think that's not what you would expect from the image he puts forth.
Right. Because, I mean, he, like you said, he has this, like, baller image. And, you know, there's a lot of women kind of throwing themselves at him to a certain degree. And... you know, it makes him look like a womanizer or something, but that's clearly not the case here.
Yeah.
And he seems to be a bit protective of Laura in some ways, which is interesting because the gods that seem like good are not necessarily the ones that are the best for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes, and I when we were going in Dionysus' club, I really thought that. Because it seems like everybody's just having a good time. It seems like you just want to party. And Dionysus is like the party wine god, you know, and everything. But there's a couple lines in there that kind of freak me out a little bit. When he says, like, you know, if you feel like it's too much, find a friend. We're all friends. And it's like, but that's circular. All that does is just pull you back into the party. Like, if you are feeling overwhelmed, go find a friend. And that friend is somebody else who's in the party. And they'll just bring you back into the party. Not that Dionysus is the only one who can pull you out, but there's that kind of sense of, like, keep the party going, like, stay in, like, he just wants to keep them hooked the same way that he has to stay there. Not mm-hmm. that he's nefarious in any kind of a way, but, like, I can see how somebody will go in there for a good time and be in there for, like, a week, a month, 2 months.
Well, that's what happens with Laura, right? She doesn't know how long she's been in there, right?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's, you're in there, you're having a good time, but that's fucking scary, man. You could be mm-hmm. in Dionysus' thrall for months and not have any track of time or place or anything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think that Dionysus is malicious, but, and you know, this isn't something we'd necessarily is described as being outright or being the case in this world, but a lot of stories that deal with gods and divinity and stuff, the gods feed off of like the worship or whatever they get from humanity. And you know, maybe Dionysus needs that form of worship, like the people partying and stuff, and he doesn't necessarily feel that he's not necessarily doing anything wrong, but it's easy to become, like you said, enthralled.
Yeah, it's tough. And same with Inanna too. Like, I could see people going there and maybe just wanting, like, a little bit of a good time, and then all of a sudden you got something up your butt you didn't want. You know? But you're in an honest thrall, so you just kind of, you know. It's the same kind of thing, but in a different way. Like, he says it's the experience with jacked up to 11. I don't think that's the way he phrases it, but that kind of thing, like, super sex. And it's like, you know, I get the feeling with a lot of these gods that seem like they're good. You go in there thinking you're going in for a good thing, and it becomes more than what you bargained for, and you're not in a position to back out. It's like kind of it's like kind of understood. Like, everyone's just there for a good time, and you can get out anytime you want. But can you really? You know, and like the Morgan and Baphomet's followers, they go down to the underground because it's their kind of party. But Laura, when she goes down, she's like, I have no idea how I'd get back out of here. Like, they don't keep her there. They don't have the same kind of thrall that the other gods do. But man, if you go to a Morrigan concert, you better know how many lefts and rights and stares you took.
Yeah.
Or you're just down there forever. At least Woden is actually a scumbag.
Yeah, he's clearly a scumbag.
Yeah.
So I think you kind of, you understand what you're getting with him, but some of the other gods, it's not, you know, it's not clear what's happening, right? You, mm-hmm. Like we said with Dionysus, you can get trapped in what seems like a good situation, but the world moves on without around you. So,
man, I was so psyched to see Woden because he's got like a Tron thing going on, and I fucking love Tron. I love Tron so much, and he's got this Tron thing going on. But I was like, oh no, he's got like the creepy Asian thing with the singers, and like, yeah, he just feels so slimy and. Ugh.
But I don't think that that's Woden so much as the person who.
Yeah, the person who got the incarnation or whatever. Yeah, yeah. But I do appreciate his point of view. Like, he is a scumbag, and what he's doing, you know, like what he does to Brunhilde?
Yeah.
Was that the Valkyrie? Yeah. Like, that's fucked up, man. But his explanation, I mean, you can see the line of logic there, where he's like, this is all I've got. I've got 2 years, and after that I'm gone, and all that's gonna be is what I've done. And he's like, I don't get to do anything. I don't have the ability. All I can do is empower other people. So, like, it matters for me. And by the same token, I don't give a fuck what you think, because I'm going to die in 2 years. Like, what matters to me is what matters to me, and fuck you. So if you think I'm being a scumbag, or if you think I'm being petty, I don't give a shit. I can be petty because it matters to me, and I'm going to die, so I don't fucking care what you think. Like, the logic is there, but I just wish you weren't such a dick. Just because he's the Tron god. What did you think of Ananka in this? I mean, other than blowing off.
Yeah.
Killing the parents.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a lot to unpack with her.
Yes.
You know, we definitely don't. She says one thing, especially when she addresses the media.
Yeah.
But I think there's more to it than that. She's. To a certain degree, I feel some sympathy towards her situation in that, you know, she is stuck in this cycle of rebirth with the gods, but she is also apart from it.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's not, she doesn't get the break and the 90 year, you know, skip. She's been alive for thousands of years, so she says, right?
Yeah.
As far as we know. And so I think it makes me feel some sympathy for her, like she's doing what she has to do because she's tied to this cycle. But I think there's more to it than that, and as the story continues, we're going to find out. You know, it's hard to say. This comic's interesting because not just as a comic, but as a story in general. In that it's not, I mean, so Laura was the protagonist for these first two, these first two trades, and now presume that she's dead, not having read the third trade. And so now it's like, who's the protagonist here? And it seems, you know, like the thing is, like, I have no idea really what's happening in this comic, but I know that I like it. Yeah. Whatever it is, it's very interesting, and it's strange. Like, part of me when Laura became Persephone, part of me like cheered, right? I was so happy for her.
Yeah.
And then she immediately got killed, and I was like, "What the fuck is going on here?" And so, you know, I don't know what's happening, but in the best kind of way, because sometimes you read something or watch something and you don't know what's happening because it's poorly written or the ideas are not presented well. But this, I mean, I can clearly see the progression, but we get answers and then they just lead to more questions. And so this definitely is one of those comics that, for me, at least, is giving me just enough to want to keep going, but not. It's not predictable, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's not predictable in where it's going to go, but it does. I think you can clue into the fact that it's good writing because it does give you enough to think about it and project possible lines too. Like Ananka does a good job of explaining things, but also being vague. I don't feel like she ever lies, but what she omits is important, right? Like, yeah. When she talks about in the beginning how it was just them and the gods fighting against the darkness. What's the darkness? Like, what is the dark force here? Like, we see, like, people, but what does that mean? What do you really mean there, Ananka? And when you say you're born out of necessity, like, you kind of explain it, that you need somebody that, but that still doesn't feel right. Like, there's a lot of details in there that are missing in the way she tells the story, but she tells it so well. And she rolls over the early details like they don't matter, so you just kind of roll with them, but there's stuff there that's important. And similarly, the decisions she makes, like, why tell Baphomet about the Prometheus Gambit? When you already know he's gonna feel tempted, and you know he's gonna find out anyway, why tell him for sure it's gonna work? And so it makes me question, when she kills Persephone and the parents, like, is she actually out of necessity, or is she killing, like, is it 12 gods because she kills the others? until she can live until the next one. Like, is the cycle really 12 or 13, or is it like 40?
Right, because...
Yeah, and she kills them to get the Prometheus thing until the next cycle comes. Mm-hmm. Is she like a vulture here? Is that what's happening? Is she's not really immortal. She's just rolling it forward every time there's a new incarnation.
And that could be.
Is she tired? Is she telling Baphomet and kind of corrupting him, hoping he'll take the mantle and she can finally die or something? There's a lot in what she's doing that you can pick up breadcrumbs and kind of like play with ideas here. Because I feel like you're right. Like the bad example of this is we get to the end and we're like, I don't know, whatever. It could be fucking anything, you know. Mm-hmm. Like you just kind of throw your hands up in the air when it's done poorly. And you're just like, I don't fucking know. I'll read the next one or I won't. Maybe. But this like I'm like, it could be this. And when you can come up with scenarios, it makes you want to read, not only to see if you were right, but see if it's something even crazier than you fucking thought of. You know? And that's because, mm-hmm. and I feel like that's what this is doing, and it rewards you. Because that was my reaction after the first one. After reading the first trade, it was like, you know, you get some possible storylines, you start thinking about it, and you're like, okay, and you start reading. And then the end of this one is even crazier than I fucking thought of. Like, yes, she was a god, but Malanka blew her head off.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I thought that would be a possibility, but I did not expect Ananka to come in and murder the shit out of Laura. And her parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I'm excited because I'm gonna go into the third trade. Thinking about what could possibly happen, and I'm willing to bet it's going to be even crazier and better than the stuff I thought of, which is just like, man, if you can keep rewarding me as a reader that way, like, I'm just going to keep fucking buying these, man. And since I bought these digitally, now I can go back and buy the nice hardcover ones that they've come out with since then.
Oh, what? I have the first, I was at a convention and I bought the first six trades because they were on sale. But I've only read the first two so far.
Yeah, they got nice hardcover ones now too. And I feel, oh man, I feel so dumb. I went into the shop the other day and I picked up Joyride 1 because I really like Joyride, and I said, "Put Joyride on my pull list," and they're like, "It's over." <I'm> like, no, because I bought the first one and then I went back to buy the rest, and I'm like, I should have just waited because like in another 6 months there's gonna be a hardcover collecting all of them, like a nice omnibus Joyride. Well, maybe not. It's not that big of a publisher. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
I would, like, always want to wait for the nice, like, omnibus edition, but sometimes it takes a while. Like, we just got Justice League International. It's been 30 years. Sometimes it takes a while.
I don't think that this one's going to take 30 years.
No, probably not. You get my drift. There might not have ever been a Joyride. Yeah. Oh, and then the other one, too. The other one that changed this one is Cassandra became Earther.
Yeah, so are they like the
Furies? Three Fates.
The Fates?
Yeah, the Three Fates.
Are the Furies the same as the Fates? I forget.
No, the Furies become the Eumenides. So the Furies chase, oh god, what was the Greek? Oh god damn it.
Oh right, yeah. They're in the Iliad. Aren't they?
No. Aeschylus. Who are they chasing? Orestia, preceded by Agamemnon, the libation bearers. They're chasing somebody, and they finally get him and bring him to court.
Oh, Orestes. Agamemnon? No, Orestes. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're the Furies when they bring him to court, and then he's absolved, I think, and they become the Eumenides instead.
Oh, right. Oh, the Eumenides is another play.
Yes.
That takes place. Yeah.
That play takes place in the cycle. Yeah. The Eumenides is also the name of my priest in World of Warcraft.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Oh, they're the Norns.
Yes, that's right. She's the Norn of Fate.
Which are the, like, Norse versions of the Fates.
Yes.
So she's not all three of them, right? It's her,
no,
like, camera.
No, she's one in her camera crew or the other two. She's, like, the main one, though.
The nameless camera crew became the nameless Norns.
I love the spread of genre in the gods too, because Ball's like, I think Ball's the hip-hop rap kind of guy, Inanna's like Prince, you know. Mm-hmm. Dionysus is like the DJ in the underground. There's like the metal people, and Earther is like what, like the spoken word, like the slam poet, spitting truths up there. I mean that crowd needs inspiration too. They you know, I don't know where to categorize that genre. And then when she sings it, like comes out all weird too, and she's like exposing the truth of the world, and then she's all sad because they just like think it's more music. She's like, no, I wanted you all to realize how pointless life is.
Maybe it's like emo or goth type music.
Oh yeah, that would make more sense, I think. Yeah, because their makeup and stuff is definitely like gothish. She was goth to start with all black over all the time. I get the feeling she's probably a little disappointed that she's a god because she's like been skeptical of all this bullshit for so long. And then she's like, well, I guess it's real because I am one. But at the same time, she's like, I'm going to use this power to let the whole world know that this whole thing is bullshit, even though I'm part of it. All right, cool. Have fun, Earther.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the reaction from the Pantheon is. Because they all, like, seem to... They all seem friendly with Laura at a certain... to a certain degree. Some more than others.
Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously we're going to... Well, maybe not obviously, but I hope we're going to get some kind of information about why Ananki did what she did.
Yeah. Yeah, I get the feeling it'll be in the next trade. We'll get some clue. Because the other gods, you know, they're going to ask, even though Inanna is dead now, Baphomet killed Inanna.
Did he succeed at killing him? I didn't...
I don't know. My takeaway is that he did.
No, because I thought that... I thought that Ananki what's her name? The Raven Goddess, like, separated them.
Morgan. That was at Ragnarok.
That was at Ragnarok.
But he went to Inanna's residency or whatever they call it.
Oh, right. And there was like a big explosion. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that part.
Oh, man. Poor Laura. She looks punk rock as shit, too. She looks awesome.
when she turns into Persephone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then her head gets blown up.
Yeah, she looks so fucking cool. So I'm like trying to scroll and find. Yeah, but the whole like church that Inanna's in blows up. Church, temple, whatever. Yeah, the whole thing explodes. So I guess... In the one sense, the whole thing fucking explodes that Baphomet did it. But in the other sense, we don't see a body. So...
And didn't Inanna do like a... Oh, wait, he's like crucified, though.
Yeah, he's like all strung up and he's already losing it.
Huh.
Because you see his sparklies kind of fade away. Like,
yeah.
He's crucified, he's upside down, and he's like all purple... And then, like, he stops being purple at the feet, and then starts being purple at the waist, and then right before the explosion, like, the only purple, like, shiny part of him is his face.
Yeah. Interesting.
Man, I really love the reveal of who Inanna was before he became a god, when he was just, like, the wallflower.
Yeah.
At the convention. Like, that was... I like that. And he then... I like the major themes of this book on two levels. I like, on one level, the idolization of musicians and celebrities and making that in a literal sort of a way and building a mythos around that. I love that idea that's in this, because you get really good concepts there. But I love the other idea of what would that person over there be if they knew they were going to die in 2 years and I were able to empower them to be the person they want to be. Like, mm-hmm. if I can empower you to just say, fuck it, And David, I want you to go out tomorrow and be the best version of yourself that you believe you can be, regardless of, like, I'm going to give you the power to just make your dream image of yourself true tomorrow. What does that become? Mm-hmm. I love that thought because, like, that's not too far from being true for a lot of people. Like, Inanna on the wall, like, Inanna's powers aren't, they're not like Ball where he's got, like, lightning and shit coming out of his eyes, you know? Inanna just kind of owned who he was and owned what he wanted to be. And that's like so much of his personality is crafted just from the fact that he got off of the wall. And so there's like a message in here for a lot of people too that I think is really interesting. And I mean, the flip side of that is Woden. Mm-hmm. I guess. You know, if you give some people empowerment, they're still going to be assholes. But I like Inanna and the fact that he was a wallflower and he gets these powers and he's still fundamentally the same kind of person who's nerdy about this. And I think he attaches just to Laura because he sees a fellow nerd. And he's like super into it. I think that's why they have that connection.
Do you think that maybe Ananki has like the ability to elevate people? It's not necessarily, you know, she says yeah. She looks for them.
That was because, my other thought.
Because maybe, you know, in this trade, Laura becomes a bit of a celebrity because she was Lucifer's friend, right?
Yeah.
And maybe Ananki thinks that because people are starting to glom onto Laura, who is not a god, she's taking something away from the actual gods.
Well, and Laura's now gotten involved with, what, a quarter of the pantheon? Not like relations-wise, but she's got connections with a lot of people in the pantheon, and I think the other thing Ananki does, low-key, or at least they tend to do, they're all kind of friendly with each other, but they're also very siloed.
Oh, yeah.
And you notice they come to Ananki one-on-one. And if Laura's suddenly making connections with a bunch of them, that might threaten whatever Ananki's trying to do. So it did come to my mind that, like, she might be picking them out and giving them abilities, too. Because why not give Laura the ability and then kill her to get the Prometheus years? I don't know how that works, because then you just kind of live forever. If you can just grant powers and take them, grant and take, grant and take, grant and take. Then you're just going around killing people to survive longer, and it's not a whole lot difference of a thing, but I part of me believes she actually does find people, but part of me is suspicious that she doesn't. She just picks them.
Well, maybe people have, like, certain people have the potential.
Yeah.
And she's able to, like, pull the potential out. So maybe Laura has the potential to be some kind of god, and her proximity to the gods somehow allows her to, you know, do stuff, like with the whole lighting the cigarette at the end of Volume 1.
Yeah.
And then Ananki makes her Persephone to, like, let her guard down or something, and then... Or maybe Ananki can't kill regular people.
Yeah, maybe she can only kill gods.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing, too, Cassandra in this gets elevated to Earther, but that's once she's, like, getting close. Or not, like, getting close to the truth, but, like, she's dicking around a lot, and she's doing a good job of getting information and finding people and getting contacts and digging up dirt. Like, she's doing a good job of it, and you get the sense that the only other people really getting involved in this are the academics, like the asshole from the convention who apologizes to Laura.
Yeah.
And if you're Ananki, you don't gotta worry about that guy. That guy's just gonna sit around and wait for the pantheon to die and then write a paper about it. Like, that's not a big deal. But if somebody like Cassandra's coming around snooping, maybe she can put shit together. Maybe the best way to deal with her is to give her powers and make her part of the problem that she's trying to fight. And then she just, like, what happened at the concert, she starts spouting truth and nobody really listens. Like, people were listening to her when she was uncovering truth, but now that she's one of them, they're not listening anymore.
Yeah, it's like she's now, you know, she wanted the answer, so Ananki gave her all the answers, but she can't share that information with the rest of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be. I'm getting swayed over to Ananki's doing it on purpose. Ananki's not finding them, she's making them.
I mean, I think she's definitely antagonistic.
Yes.
But the degree to what she's antagonistic and what the ends are for her is yet to be seen. Because I mean we get the little flashback in Volume 1 of the pantheon around that table. Most of them are dead, and there's a few that are still alive, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're all supposed to die within 2 years. But the remaining four die at each other's hands in, like, some kind of suicide pact type thing.
Yeah.
But why, right?
Yeah.
Like, why did they have to do that? Aren't they just going to die anyway?
I want to read more.
Yeah. I mean, if they're going to die in 2 years, why did they have to kill each other? It doesn't make sense.
See Attack on Titan, this is how you do it. You create a world, you make me really interested, and then you answer a couple things.
Yeah, I stopped watching the show, but I've read the manga.
I read the manga, I think last year I was reading it up until current, and it's just like, still nothing, man. I read like 100 plus volumes. I don't know any more than I did in episode one. And I got to the point, I caught up, and I was like pissed that I did all that reading and didn't get any fucking answers. So I'm just going to wait for it to end, and I'm going to read the wiki.
That's one way to get it.
That's what I'm going to do now. That's my plan for Attack on Titan. Did you want to talk about the... We could talk about the art in this a little bit, but I think we did a pretty good discussion last time.
Yeah. Since I mean, the art's beautiful. I think that the way it does a good job of showing the otherness of the gods, like Dionysus' party, or Woden and the Valkyries look... they look very different, and it doesn't look like they don't look necessarily like people wearing costumes.
Yeah.
It's like it's this otherworldly thing with Woden. Like it's not a guy wearing a suit with like glow sticks or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
it's not like he made it out of Sintra and LED strips.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the art. I mean, same thing I said. I love the art is really clean. But I would say in this, I love that the cleanness of the art helped with the blind side of Persephone at the end. Because when you have art that's this clean and this like, tidy, the violence with the blood splatter that is inherently not tidy, inherently not clean, it feels really out of place. And it, not like it was done wrong, but it makes for a really stark contrast. So not only was the turnaround a surprise, but the art style really helped make that moment much more dramatic on top of that, which is, I think, that's what you have comics for, is when you could say it in words, or you could draw a picture, or the two together just make it even better than either one could have done on their own. So like that, oh, especially when she's like starting to sing and you get to see the finger come up from behind her neck and then the snap and then blood everywhere, and that blood, like, you get like the oh is it really good? And then the blood just like that, I don't know, that for me, that turned the page and actually seeing it was like, oh shit.
Yeah,
because it breaks a lot of the form and style that've been happening in this comic and this art. And it's not like all two trades were leading up to that moment, but when you get that kind of synergy, it works so good, and it's ooh, so good. And this art, it's great anyway, but oh god, the covers are magnificent. I love the cover with just the missing head.
It's yeah, just like stump the top of a neck. Neck.
Yes. Oh, that was genius. All right. You want to rate this?
Yeah.
All right. So before we rate, I'm going to say, what I'm trying to do, after episode 300 and on, I want to thank Kyron Gillen for authoring this, Jim McKelvey for doing the pencils, Matthew Wilson for doing the colors, Clayton Cowles for doing the letters, Chrissy Williams for being the editor, and all the probably dozens or maybe hundreds of other people who helped make this comic get out into my hands. Because aside from this being a great comic, even if it were a bad comic, like if these people hadn't come together and made this happen and put it on the shelf in my comic book store, we wouldn't be sitting here to talk about it. So thank you all of those people for coming together and making a piece of art and a piece of work that we can read and enjoy and talk about. And then I'm going to go first, because I never do. I'm going to give this a, I want to give it a 5. I'm going to give it a 4.5 for no good reason. No, I'm going to give it a 5. I'm going to improvise. There's parts in this that kind of lulled for me, were a little bit slower. Like, I don't really care at all about Laura's Twitter following. But at the same time, I probably shouldn't care, because Laura's a fucking teenage girl and I'm a grown-ass man. So it matters to her, and in the narrative of the comic, therefore it matters because she's the main character and we're following her. So it needs to be there, but it doesn't matter to me. I mean, there's those kind of things that kind of slow down, even though I see why they're in there. I get it, and I understand. But I'm going to give it a 5, because I just keep thinking about she's standing there singing and then hand comes up from off panel to snap at the back of her neck. Those panels are so good. And she's like singing and crying and having her moment, and she's completely unaware. Oh, and then your heart breaks for that moment, and then the parents walk up. And your heart breaks all over again. Yeah, five. That moment's perfect. There's other great things in this comic, but that moment is fucking perfect. So yeah, five. Five. David?
Yeah, I think I'm also going to give this a five. It's just, like, it's hard to find any real fault with this comic. I mean, not everybody's going to like it, obviously, but, you know, it's just really good. It's well put together. You know, the art is beautiful. I don't have any complaints about it. I'm going to go read the third one right now.
Yeah, do it. I don't know about right now. It's kind of late. Well, you go to bed after I do.
Yeah, maybe not right now. But soon.
All right. Well, that ends our Podcaster's Choice Volume 2 series. If you like this show, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. You can support the show for, I don't know, a penny if you want. $5 makes you an associate producer. We don't have one of those yet. So if you want to do that, then we will put your name at the end of every show where we do this whole wrap-up-y bit. That's something I'm trying. Other shows do that, and I like it. It seems like a good idea, but if nobody's going to do it for us, we'll find something else. If you have an idea for a $5 thing, tell me. We'll do it. The other thing you can do if you like this show, you can go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, hit the button that says Future Shows. You'll see what we got coming up. You hit Past Shows. We have 302 other episodes for you to check out. And if you have a suggestion, you can hit Contact. Fill out the form. It'll go straight to my inbox. Or you can tweet at me, at Jolly Andy. You can also find Welcome to Comics on Facebook and Twitter. Just do Welcome to Comics or /Welcome to Comics, however that works. And next week, we're going to actually start a new series. We're going to do a little sci-fi series. I didn't know what to call it, so I just have sci-fi stuff as the title. Maybe we'll give it a name next week. We're going to start with Star Wars Tag and Bink Were Here by Kevin Rubio. Because David suggested it, and I'm always down for some Star Wars, especially if it's fun. And then we're going to do The City of Shifting Waters, which is the first trade in Valerian and Laureline, written by Christine Pierre. I don't know. It's French. And then we're going to read Judge Dredd, America, by John Wagner. That's not the first trade in Dredd, but when I read Judge Dredd, everybody was like, start on trade number 5, because the first 4 are kind of just slow. Or just, like, episodic. And a lot of people said, read America, because it gives you a good bite of what Dredd is all about, and if you like it, you can go for this. So we're going to read Judge Dredd, America, which is kind of like a one-off in the Dredd universe. Like a one-off graphic novel. So yeah, next week though, Star Wars, Tag and Bink Were Here by Kevin Rubio. I'm pumped for that because David's into it and it's Star Wars.
It's pretty funny.
That's all I got.